Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going for more than 43 years now, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m. we sit in front of our radios, and we chat with each other, and we exchange information. We learn from each other, we teach each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And once again, I thank you all for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you our usual links. Okay. If you want to reach me via email, that would be for what we used to call mailbag questions, questions normally asked during the technical net, but if you weren't able to get onto the air at the time of the net, you would email me, and I'd read it, and we'd discuss it if it sounded interesting. Or if you have a topic that's in the news, every so often some technical aspect becomes newsworthy, and some of our listeners are knowledgeable on the subject and like to teach us what's going on to better understand what's going on. So if you email me and you say, you know, I'm a semi-expert on aviation and it was a plane accident and I'd like to talk about it, we'll give you the time to discuss it. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for technical puzzles to kind of stimulate discussion. Or if you have something from space or NASA related that you would like to have Paul comment on, of course, you can directly contact him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com, but you can contact me and I'll contact him. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as always, throughout the week, I cut and paste a bunch of interesting articles and YouTube videos and what have you, stuff that I feel is interesting. And I put them up on my link page. You can get to the link page by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the links, and we keep the links up for a long, long time. So you don't have to go right now. You don't have to go this week. You'll find the same links there for months to come. Also, we have a chat room. Sometimes it's busy. Lately, it's been kind of quiet. So you can access it by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that will take you to the chat room. And as I've often mentioned, we offer an audio stream on the Internet of the technical net, and we leave it live the rest of the week. So if people are not able to have their radio with them, they want to know what's happening in Glen Oaks, you just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And you'll have the audio stream. We try and keep it up as much as we can, you know, 24/7, as much as possible. And I always like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called AmateurRadio.tv, and it has archives of this technical net that goes far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of amateur radio operators who have moved away from the area, or unfortunately became silent keys, passed away. Their wisdom continues to exist in the archive audio files. So take a listen when you have a chance. Those are the usual links. I'll drop for a second and we'll come back. Okay, well, we have a standard operating schedule for tonight. I will ask for questions of a science, technology, or even ham radio nature, and take names, and we'll make up a list. I would like the first few questions, if possible, to be radio amateur related, since this is Radio Amateur Net, but we will discuss any aspect of science and technology that anyone wants to bring up as best we can. So that should take us approximately, hopefully, to about 10:15. And Paul, WS2N, will bring us the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m. And I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan if everything remains functional. Repeater, my shack, my computer, my brains, all kinds of things have been known to go wrong in the years in the past, but usually very infrequently. So hopefully we will have a very pleasant evening. Anyway, this is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. We're open for business. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they would like to discuss for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your call, your first name, and if it's a question or a comment, if it's amateur radio related or not. And off we go.
WA2VDH, John, with some comments on the Abramenko effect and a couple of things from discussion from last week. Also, I will yield my position to someone who may have an amateur radio related question.
And to XGN, exactly the same, a little bit extended. And I consider it to be a hand related, but it's more from the size standpoint, so it's up to you, Dr. Wright.
Okay, John and Wes recognized. Anyone else want to come onto the list? I mean, you'll have an opportunity later on, but it's always nice to know that there are people waiting in the wings.
KD2REK, good evening, Roy. Just simply supporting this evening. I appreciate all you do. I'll be in the wings listening, 7-3.
Okay, very good. Great to hear you. I appreciate. Relax and listen in. Anyone else want to put their name on the list early tonight? Going, gone. Come on. Okay. Hopefully later on someone will think of a question or a topic or a comment or something. We'll get them thinking. We'll see what the future brings us. So, John, what do you think of this Abramenko fork? What do you think is the nature of the energy it's demonstrating?
Okay, fine business. From as far as I can tell, looking at the circuit there, and had to dig a little bit for the circuit, but the return path seems to be through stray capacitance. It's a circuit where, one of the videos I saw that shows on a little scope screen on the side there, a square wave, and then as dual trace, a sine wave, like they're driving some kind of resonant circuit, and then a separate circuit with these two large loops of wire, which from another video seem to be connected to a pair of diodes that are charging a capacitor across some type of flash tube. In one case, it's a fluorescent tube. In another case, I think it's a xenon-filled photoflash tube. And apparently in one case, they take a statically charged plastic rod and are able to get the fluorescent tube to fire by holding the statically charged rod next to it, which causes, I guess, a partial ionization of the vapor in the fluorescent tube, and then the capacitor discharges. Let me drop. So I think what is happening is that there is pickup occurring either via the one wire or else just from the inductive coupling of these large loops of wire. And the return path is most likely stray capacitance because the frequency seems to be fairly high. They don't mention what the frequency is, but I think they said it is well up into the megahertz. So a stray capacitance, in my opinion, is what the return path is. As far as that Abramenko fork, I don't think it's anything slick, nothing brand new or anything. It's just that the return path is stray capacitance, and therefore it looks like it's working via one wire. Now, the other thing on the plasmons, let me drop. On that plasmons, from what I can see, a plasmon, PLASMON, is a collection of interacting electrons that form at the boundary between two different media. They were using, in one case, I think, glass and some other insulating material. And it seems to be right at the interface between these two materials. And what happens is some kind of non-propagating wave is set up in one of the materials, similar to the abandonment modes or cutoff modes that occur in a waveguide. Like when you take a waveguide below cutoff, like WR90, if you try to operate it at 4 or 5 gigahertz, which is below its cutoff, you don't get any propagation. The wave exponentially dies away from the point of application. So that type of advantage mode is similar to what they call a plasma in this in one of the media interfaces. That's as much as I was able to figure out from it. A lot of the stuff gets very deep, so I may have to dig some more in it. Anyway, that's the comments I have. I'm sure Wesley has some comments also. So let me turn it back to net control.
Okay, very good, John. Yeah, I mean, that's from the reading. That's what I got as well, that it's some degree of capacitive coupling, and it's just kind of soaking up some real low amplitude static energy that's always there. You know, whenever you walk on some rugs or something and touch the doorknob, you get the spark, but you're not going to kind of run power to your house through something like that. So the plasmons, you know, you talked about waveguides, but this is kind of, plasmons are electrons. They're not electromagnetic waves. Wesley discusses solitons, I think they are. I've forgotten the fancy name. Those are actually electromagnetic waves that are similar in that they exist in a plane of a conductor and a dielectric. Did you look at anything about solitons?
No, I was not able to see anything on solitons. Yeah, for the plasmons, they did describe it as a collection of interacting electrons that seem to form at the boundary between two different media. Okay.
Yeah, that's my understanding. I mean, they're kind of fringe real science. You don't really kind of pick up a copy of Scientific American and see three different articles on the subject. I found something interesting in the IEEE documents, but unfortunately I could only get an abstract. In order to get access, because I'm not an IEEE member, to get access to the article, I think I was going to have to pay $34, which I wasn't about to pay.
Oh, okay. It's interesting. Where you saw that, I might be able to access that. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll send you a copy of the abstract, and it's kind of easy. If you just Google it, you end up in some IEEE site that asks to prove that you're a member. So you might be able to get it, and you know, if you could send me a copy, I'd really appreciate it.
I'll look into that. I think I paid my IEEE dues, so yeah, I should be able to get it. So yeah, I'll check into it. I'll be looking for your email for the link there.
Okay, very good. Wes, you want to? Someone echoing somewhere, but nevertheless, you want to bring discuss the Avramenko fork with John?
Yes, of course. So I sent you the number of emails. You could relate this email to John. There's videos, there's articles, and he would be able, even though that many of them are Russian, there are a few in English as well, and he would be able to see them. And in one of them you see 220 volts, 50 watts light bulb, incandescent light bulb, that's lighting up between the two diodes. So we're talking about the Avramenko fork, see two diodes in reverse connect, twisted together. The two legs of it are twisted together, and between two other legs, you have a load. So those two twisted together are connected to one single wire. It could be a few hundred feet long, and you see on one video that is probably approximately 50 feet long, and connected to the power supply, but it has to be AC power supply. So what the guys did is, in order to exclude any doubt, they made a cockpit or any kind of generator that is able to generate the signal and power it from the battery.
Oh, Wes, what frequency is this done at?
Over to the game.
Oh, well, what frequency do they do this effect where they're lighting this incandescent bulb at? What frequency is that at?
25 kHz to 150 kHz.
Okay, that sounds a bit low, because I have an antenna demonstrator with an experiment that I demonstrate. It runs at about 150 megahertz, and one of the experiments is a single rod antenna with a couple of light bulbs that are just on this one rod, incandescent light bulbs, and they light up when I feed RF into, because of you get an RF standing wave on there, and they light up at the high current points on that single wire, that single rod antenna. So I was wondering if they were doing something like that. 150 kilohertz, though, sounds a little bit low. We have to be quite a long piece of wire. Okay, I'll have to look at those videos to see what's what.
Yeah, Dr. Roy has those emails, so he can simply forward them to you. It's not important how much power it is. The only what is important is that there is a potential difference between two heads of the diode connected to one single wire. That's what is important. So when I said about 5 minutes, you can twist two diodes, connect to your generator. Actually, I have a generator like a 10 watts between 10 kilohertz to up to 500 kilohertz. And I was able to connect those two diodes. Now, important is, what I say, my sounds are not precise, because it's not precise. It is important, impedance is important. So the impedance of the load after halfway rectification, if we could call it halfway rectification, is important for you to have a result. In other words, when you connect the two diodes together to the wire and to the generator, and you put the voltmeter between those two, of course, it depends from the frequency. Your voltmeter has to be capable of catching that frequency, because if it's 2 kilohertz or 1 kilohertz voltmeter, and you're trying to measure 25 kilohertz or 150 kilohertz, it might not be that successful. Let me drop. So, the important is, if you could explain, because it's a nice puzzle, why should I give the answer? why there is a different voltage difference between those two legs? It shouldn't be. And if it's a straight capacitor, what is the origin of the straight capacitor? It's not, definitely not the electrostatic charge. Forget about it. It's not true. The same like with the light bulbs from 2 meters high power, they are incandescent, they are giving a light. It's different phenomena. So we are trying to talk about a guiding structure, and that's what I'm going to be talking about next. But I'm listening to your comment about it. Back to you, Tom.
if I have it. Yeah, well, okay. A lot of times you can get a stray capacitance effect, and it won't be obvious. You know, the stray capacitance return won't be obvious. But as I said, especially at higher frequencies, it's very common to see incandescent lights, you know, that will actually glow with a single wire. As I said, I have an antenna trainer, which is this model where it uses a generator at 150 megahertz, and by putting single rod antennas in this holder and with a single light bulb, where it's just in series with the rod, and the rod ends in free space, plugs into one outlet, and you can get the light to light because of that. It's a high current point on that, with that forms on that standing wave antenna. But I'll take a look at the other videos and you know, see what actually see what frequency they're running at. Okay, I'm going to turn it back to Net Control, and then maybe we'll pass it to you. So back to Net.
Okay, thank you, John. I forwarded you the email. Maybe Wes, you should have done that too. I think you have John's email address. I don't remember. Anyway, for people kind of listening and who might be interested in what the heck everyone's talking about, I put the schematic of the bare bones, so-called Abramenko fork, on my link page. Again, you type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and it's the next to first entry for this week. So it shows you the schematic. So when Wes talks about the diodes and capacitors, you kind of hopefully will be able to take a look at the schematic and better understand what's going on. Wesley?
Yes. So if we take the generator and then we take the one wire and say 300 feet of wire connect to that generator, just one wire, and then we connect at the end of it two diodes, one in reverse, so two legs twisted, and then we put the load between the two open other legs, then you're going to have a voltage. So the question is why. Okay, but it is one wire transmission, energy transmission. And somebody may think, the circuit must be closed. And they are right, absolutely, completely right. The only what I'm not saying is how the circuit is closed, because just one wire. But anyhow, if we're talking about some other things, first I would like to compliment one guy. Let me drop. Imagine that you have someone, the role model, the friend, the person you respect so much for his incredible brain, knowledge, elegant language, that is kind of precise and concise and smooth like a butter. He dedicated his time and knowledge to help all of you for years. Not because he has to, but because he wants to. And this person for me is Dr. Roy. But going back to the electromagnetic waves, the every human on this planet, well, actually, energy transfer makes us harm standing on the top of sending energy from point A to any point B when we're talking to other guys, and we're investing in transceivers, transmission lines, amplifiers, and antennas. So, for some guys, it may sound difficult, what I'm going to say next, but we're talking about technology, fiber optic and the internet and IP phone and LED light bulbs at home. All of it is like basic needs for all of us. So I'm just responding to Dr. Roy, who pointed at difference between surface plasma polariton and Zenek waves. Due to our discussion on the last segment, let me drop. So it is academic. It sounds academic, but it's a part of every day when we learn electromagnetic waves. That's what we do. We are hunters. Okay. So, we were talking about the Zenic wave, and we were talking about differences, and that is going to be complicated, but Dr. Roy and John is going to understand that. So Zenic wave variation was found to excite, maybe not from that, maybe I start from something else. They couldn't understand non-radiating electromagnetic wave. How electromagnetic wave cannot radiate? It's radiating. It's photons, right? But he couldn't understand water flowing in the pipe without spilling it. He could even understand well the electromagnetic wave in the fiber optic, but he saw it rather as a light or piece of information. Science sees it as electromagnetic wave trapped in the tunnel, made from two different media. So if we have two dielectrics having different dielectric contacts, or conductive dielectric medium as a sandwich, or partially conductive medium and dielectric medium as a sandwich, or Gobow, Sommerfeld Gobow, or G line, there are three names for the same, as a single wire transmission line used to conduct radio waves. In UHF, or microwave, it is just because that wire. Because the wire coated with dielectric. So dielectric coated transmission line was invented by Ed Harms in 1907 and George G.A. Gobow in 1950. And it is a classical example of two media, conductive wire dielectric, where the space between the dielectric and the wire is your highway for electromagnetic waves. That's how that kind of waveguide works. So you can make this wire, means conductive medial flat. The wire could be flat, right? But it still be coated with the electric, or partially coated. Then we need a certain method to make that wave to be trapped between the space between the conductive medium and the dielectric. So sandwich together. So when we're talking about waveguides don't differ much from any other transmission lines. They just allow the wave to be trapped like a water in a pipe. Let me jump. Okay. One of the things that is important for between the electric and the conductive medium to have ability to save the center wave to that highway is a half space. So we have a half space between conductor and between the dielectric on the top of it. And I assume that Avramenko's work was working similar way. We have a conductive medium, which is the wire. And then we have air. Air is dielectric. So if we have a proper condition for it, we can send that energy from point A to point B very far away. Okay, I said so much till now. Dr. Roy, no, I was talking about last time about Zenic waves, resonant surface wave with Chiral interfaces, surface wave with gyroscopic interfaces, nonlinear surface wave, surface plasma polariton, and Dekanoff surface wave. There is also optical time, but we're not talking about that. All of it is just a variation to the Zenic wave. And I'm going to be talking next about the similarities and differences between those so you can understand that. But so far, Joe, do you have any questions and do you understand what I'm talking about?
Did you turn it over to me?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
Okay. Well, a couple of things. First of all, the difference between waveguides and transmission lines is quite a big difference. So a waveguide, the classical microwave waveguide, has a cutoff frequency, okay, below which you cannot operate, whereas a transmission line like coaxial cable will work down to DC, okay, with like regular RG58 or 59U or whatever, will propagate all the way down to DC, whereas a waveguide will have a definite low frequency cutoff. The same thing holds true with fiber optics, which is a type of waveguide. The wave is guided because you have usually two different materials which have a dielectric difference. There's usually a core material and a cladding material. And the difference in those two materials, of course, at optical frequencies, they don't call it different impedance. They call it index of refraction. But the two different indices of refraction is what causes the total internal reflection and guides the light is confined to the core. Of course, as you go lower in frequency, you do reach a cutoff frequency. I don't know, it may be somewhere in the infrared or something where it stops propagating. But again, that is a type of waveguide. That's about as much only comments I particularly have. The other things about Zenith waves, surface waves and whatnot, I'm not too sure of. I know that there are surface waves that occur in HF. Anyway, let me turn it back to net control. I hope I didn't time out.
No, you didn't time out, John. Thank you, John. I don't think it's necessary to kind of go into esoterica. I think it's a legitimate good idea. I've seen it written before. John kind of got it as well. That it's much more likely that what's going on is it seems like a one-wire system, but you're capacitively coupling the circuit to give it a kind of virtual second. In the same way that we have a quarter wave vertical antennas and we have a virtual mirror image of it. So I don't think you have to go into Gabow lines. I think the persnickety way of getting G-lines to actually work, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, and you need to have a kind of a conic beginning and a conic end to them. This is just a stray wire. So I think it's just picking up whatever static charges are around. It's capacitively coupling to all kinds of things on those guys' tables, including those guys. And I don't think it's necessary to kind of wave a magic stick. Also, I sent you the abstract, and hopefully I'll be able to get the whole article, where a guy who's working on it, with credentials from the IEEE and such, doesn't think that Zenith waves are the same as polariton, I forget the whole long name for those things. They're different entities, according to his article, apparently, which hopefully I'll read in its entirety. So we're kind of stuck in the middle someplace. I know that you would like it to be a G-line or Zenith wave method of getting the current from one point to the other, but it's much more likely that it's simply a capacitive coupling, in my humble opinion.
Well, we have a different opinion. But when we're talking about Avramenko Fyodorovich, 1932 to 1999. He was a Russian scientist, weapon designer, deputy director, and doctor of technical sciences, professor since 1957 till 1968. He worked at the Radio Engineering Institute to form the lab department there, and working as a designer of radars, I'm reading in here the research department. He was the head of Center of Plasma Technologies, chief designer, the deputy, the general designer and deputy director. He participated in the development of A-135 system, also military system, flagon system. He published 54 scientific articles, issued 37 copyright certificates and 3 patents of the invention. One of them was Abramenko Fork. So that's what I have on him. And I sent also that information. Although the Wikipedia that has the information is Russian, I translated that into English.
Wesley, it's all well and good. The problem is you can't really prove anyone's theories based upon their previous history. Linus Pauling was a brilliant Nobel prize winner. He was a great chemist. I must have told this a dozen times on the TechNet. I actually met him for a couple of seconds at an American Chemical Society meeting. And he was a charming, charming guy. But he was full of manure towards the end of his life. He presented that vitamin C cured colds and all kinds of things. He promoted vitamin C, which in excessive quantities that he recommended gave people kidney stones. So, and this is a guy with a Nobel Prize. Your Avramenko doesn't have a Nobel Prize. So brilliant guys can get things wrong. So you can't use previous successes to prove things that might not be successes.
Of course I agree with that. Of course you're right. But the thing is that the devil is in details, and you say don't go to the details. So you send me the article that make a statement. You don't have a copy of the article, but you have a few words from it. And then you say, you know what, there is no need to discuss it. Well, we can say that Zenek waves are excited at the interfaces like the surface plasmas and can deliver electrical power to the devices placed on that conductive surface. We can say that. And that's also from the article, and I have all of the names of the scientists working on it. And we can say that although both of the surface waves propagate on the interface between the two half spaces, is what I said about the half spaces, the air and the earth, or the air and the metal, the conductor, which is the medium. So both surface waves propagate on the interface between the two half spaces of the material. Their physical properties are very different. For example, the simple vertical dipole, electric dipole source, will never excite a field that looks like a Zenek wave on the interface, while surface plasma polaritron field can be a dominant part of the total dipole field. So the issue is a pool versus zero of the reflection coefficient for those waves. And that needs also to be clarified. And the relationship between the Zenek wave and the Leakey wave also. But if I don't go to the details, then you said the word, and the word stays there. That's the problem that I have. And the next thing is that what you said is the Zenek waves are product of the zero of the reflection coefficient and incident TM wave, which is the transfer magnetic polarization on the air dielectric surface, whereas the surface plasmons are produced when the reflection coefficient is infinite and the conditions are right for this phenomenon to occur. The thing is that all of them are trapped. It's a pipe. It's like a pipe. So when I said to John about the transmission line, it was like a very, very white form of trying to put things together, which was wrong. So if I don't go to the details, then everybody thinks that it doesn't make sense. It's a static electromagnetics, static charge that happened. I mean, it's common nonsense. Dr. Ray.
Well, it is not me that said that. I was quoting from the abstract of a guy with a PhD who studies this all the time. So I assume he knew better than I, and possibly better than you. I don't know. Unfortunately, I gave you what I had. I had the abstract. I did not have access to the entire article. So if you were interested in the article, you could hunt it down if you were so inclined. Hopefully, John will provide it, and if he does, I'll send you a copy just to make sure that you got it. But, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of things. I mean, in his abstract, he also definitively says that the ununiform nature of urban environments is not capable of maintaining those type of propagation waves. And I'd really appreciate if you stop using hydraulics as an analogy, because hydraulics is a nice analogy for high school students. And, you know, when you're drawing Ohm's law and you draw the pipe and the pressure and the volume of the flow, it's not electromagnetism. It fails, you know. The reason analogies are analogies are because they're vast simplifications that, for the sake of giving you a foothold on the initial understanding, and then you move on to the real things. You know, it's like people who learn the Bohr atom, and they actually think the electron is orbiting like the moon is orbiting. So, you know, I would suggest that you not kind of jump too quickly into this hydraulics metaphor.
Good job. I like it. Dr. Ray, thank you very much. You're absolutely right. So then I should go to all of these pieces of plasmas as a quasi-particle associated with plasma oscillation. Then surface plasma, which is the excitation expander of the material, then polariton. So that's not easy. So instead of saying that you have some photons and you have some particles representing the excitation, instead you have a hybrid particle that is simply called polariton. And then we can go to surface plasma polariton, which is a quasi-particle couple of the couple modes of the EM field and surface plasma oscillation. So if I go into it, then you see that all of it is one kind of something. So we say mammals, and then we have a dog, then we have a cat, then we have a human being. It's just that all of it makes understanding of what is really a surface wave, and what is a surface wave trapped in the interface. I wonder if John had a chance to see that video that I, lesson 21, I believe. John?
I saw a couple of videos there. I'm going to have to look for them again. There was one video I saw where it did show a kind of propagating wave at the interface between these two media. But I want to check that again. But there's a wider issue here, Wes. There's something that's very easy to fall prey of. And that's where that whole expression of Occam's razor comes into effect, that you always consider first the simpler solution. Like with this Abramenko fork, want to make sure you completely analyze the more simpler, trivial solution that could actually be happening before you start looking for, you know, more exotic things. Otherwise, you can cut yourself with an Occam's razor. But anyway, it's something to really consider. That, you know, just to consider the simpler solution rather than the more exotic. Go ahead.
I do appreciate your comment, but I was under the impression that Hal made for bricks, and bricks could be different. And the chimney is made from different bricks, which is different temperature withholding factor. It's quite very much from different ceramic. So if we don't go to the components of the structure, how can we talk about understanding the structure? Would you please be so kind and correct me?
I know you raise a good point, Wes. You do raise an important point, but it's like I say, sometimes we can get involved with the deeper solution when really it's a more basic or more simpler thing is actually happening. But as I say, it's good to investigate these things. It's good to dig into them because many times interesting things are happening right under our nose that we don't get a chance to examine deep enough, and this is how new things are discovered. But in this case, I really think it is stray capacitance. But I'm going to look into it some more to see what's what.
Very good point. There was a time when electromagnetism was not known. And there was a time when Marconi was able to make the first communication between England and part of Canada, if I remember correctly. And there was the first radio communication using a spark gun. So if you're talking about the spark up, you're talking about humongous bandwidth, where let's say 150 kilohertz is on the top, and then on the higher part it goes to 1 gigahertz, very low amplitude, and then on the lower part it goes to the single kilohertz. But we had it. And it is proven that if you have a salt water, that is salted water, which is the ocean, or Salt Lake City, like in Salt Lake City we have, this kind of structure is a very good conducting a medium. The air sits on it, and it's a good for the surface wave to travel. So... I during the years I was able to read a number of articles standing about how the surface wave is being conducted. I would appreciate if Dr. Roy say a few words about how the ground wave is bending around the air. Dr. Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, we've kind of discussed this over and over and over and over and over again. I believe in ground waves. I believe in interaction with Earth and air, and that's manifested most nights. It's late at night. People are able to hear clear channel AM broadcasts coming in from places like Chicago. So it is a phenomenon. It's not quite a dependable phenomenon. You can't put a lot of energy into it. It's, again, still radio waves. We're talking of propagation and getting microvolts out. It's kind of a straw man. I believe in plane wave propagations of a kind. Again, I'm always a little bit weirded out when professionals keep talking about Zenik-like waves, or say Zenik waves and put air quotes around them. So it makes me wonder what the heck's going on higher up. There are a lot of interesting phenomena. My guess is a lot of people listening tonight don't have the faintest idea what any of us are talking about, even though we have discussed this many times before, and Dick discussed this with you times before. So, unfortunately, this is a rather esoteric field within an esoteric field. So, the number of people that I think are just sitting there saying, well, of course, are very few and far between.
Well, at least one time we had to touch it. That wasn't touched for many, many years. And it's interesting how the electromagnetic wave can bend around the Earth. The photon goes through the straight lines. Photon doesn't bend. So, if you're talking about the ionosphere Earth reflection, that is known. But the science is taking advantage of the internal reflection of the fiber optic, because there are two different media. between the dielectric that is a glass and the dielectric that is air. So the same story is in a number of devices used right now in the devices that uses the surface waves. The only thing is that they use a different type of surface waves. That's why I asked John to go to lecture 21, surface waves. But it's impossible. This way, I thought he would be able to talk about it, but I understand that we actually beat up bushes around, and we should switch to another topic. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. John, if you have a comment, please.
Oh, well, not really. Yeah, I'm going to investigate more and do more reading on it to see what's what. One thing I did want to mention earlier, I think you mentioned G-line or Gabbro line, and again, that is a type of a waveguide type structure, because you come in with a coaxial line, but then the braid of the coax, you fan out with a cone-like structure, which causes the electric field lines now to not terminate on an outer conductor, but to terminate some distance ahead or behind on that same wire. So you are actually propagating a TM or a TE mode, I'm not sure which, whether you are propagating a waveguide-like mode. And then to convert back to coax, you have another one of those conic pieces which gradually fans in, and then the cone connects to the outer braid of a coaxial cable. So then you can convert back to the regular TEM mode that exists in coaxial cable. But so that G line, which is a single wire conductor, but that is, again, has a cutoff frequency, just like a regular waveguide does. But again, it's interesting material to read on and to study up on. I'm going to do some more reading on it and see what comes of it. I'm going to turn it back to Net Control.
AC2GS. Thank you, John, as always, for your expertise and for your willingness to suffer me that doesn't know an eighth or a tenth of what you do in the field. So I really do appreciate you participating in this. It adds a little bit. It's kind of reminiscent to the good old days when Dick was here and he was the primary guy on the other side from West. So thanks again, John.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. I appreciate the time given to me. Back to you.
Okay, you're done for this Sunday, West?
KF2CC, sending one copy.
Yes, I do. Hello again. Brian, right?
KF2CC, sending one copy.
Yes, Brian, I copy. This is AC2GS. Well, this is curious. Apparently, Brian can transmit, but he can't receive. I wonder what's going on there. Something wrong with his radio, maybe? I don't know exactly what's going on with Brian. Anyone want to trip the repeaters? I'm going through All Star. Maybe it's an All Star thing.
Anyone cop?
This is AC2GS. Anyone out there? Anyone, let's try someone in Selden. Anyone in Selden, can they just kind of throw out a comment to Brian and see if he hears the Selden repeater?
Hi, Roy. This is Paul WS2N. Brian, copy.
Nice.
He doesn't have his ears on. I hear you. I hear Brian. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, it's maybe something, either something wrong with his headphone, or if he has a headphone or speaker, or just the receiver circuit, unfortunately. Hopefully he'll get it fixed, or he'll try another radio. I don't know if Brian has another radio, so that'll be interesting. Anyway, Wesley, any other questions, comments, topics for tonight, or are you kind of done?
Just maybe a little summary. The major point was that earth is conducting. It's a bad conductor, but it is still conductor. And as long as we have a structure where is where we have a conductor and then we have a dielectric which is air on it, we can try with the proper technique to fit the electromagnetic wave into that space between the air and the earth. And that is why the surface waves we discussed today. But anyhow, as long as I do not present the working structure from point A to B, it would be for many, including Dr. Roy, my friend, something that is theoretical. So let's leave it for tonight, and I hope somebody will have some thoughts for tonight talking about something else. Dr. Roy, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, C2GS. Well, thank you, Wesley. Once again, the night is young. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, feel free, hit that push to talk, and introduce yourself.
KF2CC, anyone copy?
Yes, Brian, we all hear you. The problem is I don't think you hear us. Do you hear us now? No, I guess once again, he just does not hear a signal coming from the repeater. So interesting. His transmitter seems to be working reasonably well, but receiver, not so well. Once again, everyone else other than Brian who can't hear me anyway, if anyone has any subjects that they would like to bring up, any topics for discussion, any comments, what have you, the night is young. I mean, we could make a short version of the technical net tonight if everyone would like to just, you know, sit back and relax, but give you the opportunity to bring up, you know, any science or technology subjects or ask a question, make a comment, tell us what happened to a subject that we discussed a while ago that you went back and tried different things and what worked and what didn't. You know, this, again, is a net, not a show, so it requires the participation and action of listeners as well as the net control operator. We're not doing a monologue here. Anyway, anyone out there with any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push-to-talk button and introduce yourself.
It's WA2VDH. I have a comment.
Certainly, John.
Yeah, this has to do with, it's a subject we've talked about, a number of months ago, actually maybe a number of years ago, and that's long delay echoes. And the discussion always led to the point of the source of the long delay echo was from a reflection off some object. And, of course, because of the delay time, the object had to be quite a distance away to give a 2, 3, 4 or more second delay. But that couldn't be because the signal strength of the echo was so strong. But I remember an instructor I had back in my days at CCNY, when pterodactyls could be seen on the horizon, that he said that the source of the long delay echoes was a kind of slow wave that was set propagating in the ionosphere. In other words, some kind of RF to slow wave conversion and then back to RF again, which was actual source of the long delay echo. I wonder if you've ever heard anything like that.
No, I haven't. I would like to know what the nature of that interaction. I mean, the ionosphere reflects, refracts, absorbs, scatters. I don't know what method would it kind of convert the RF to a slow wave, and what's the name?